Good morning, everyone. The reading this morning is taken from the book of Mark, and it's chapter 2, verses 18 to 22. Now, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. Some people came and asked Jesus, "How is it that John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees are fasting, but yours are not?" Jesus answered, "How can the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? They cannot so long as they have him with them. But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and on that day they will fast. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the new piece will pull away from the old, making the tear worse. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins." This is the word of the Lord.
Good to be with you this morning. And for those of you that are visiting or haven't been for a while, welcome, either welcome or welcome back. It's lovely to see you. We've been journeying through the book of Mark. When we say journeying, we're in chapter 2. I was reflecting on two things as Jules was reading. One is that I'm really glad we chose the shortest of the Gospels, because we seem to be in Mark quite a bit, quite a long time, and we're only in chapter 2. And B, I was really glad, I'm always pleased, when the reader reads the passage that I'm expecting them to read. It always delights me, I think, of you. I'm glad I've prepared the right talk. I'm sure that I'm not alone to have had some strange assumptions being made about me and what I can, and more importantly, what I cannot do as a Christian, especially a professional one at that. Not that I regard myself as a professional Christian, but you know what I mean, one who's paid to be one. that didn't come across well either, really, did it? So I was reflecting on this the other day, and it's particularly noticeable in the time that I spend with the regiment that I'm a chaplain to in the army. And for those of you that have spent any time in any public service, whether that's in the military, in the emergency services, probably in education or anything, you'll realise that actually, in particular, people in the military, I'm sure sailors, I've only experienced soldiers and airmen, but I'm fairly sure Justin will assure me that sailors are no different, is that it's not uncommon for them to use some rather choice language. And they constantly apologise when they do that. They do it all the time. And then, oh, sorry, Padre, excuse my French. You think, well, I speak a little French, and that isn't French. I find it strange that people need to apologize when they swear in front of me and not in front of anyone else. They wouldn't apologize if they did it in front of anyone else. But it's when it's done in front of me, they feel the need to say they're sorry for it. And I'm sure that I'm not entirely alone. And it's strange, as Christians, there's some assumptions made about what we can and can't do and about the behavior that we demonstrate. And I think to some extent that's quite, that's an important thing for us to realize, that actually when we are out and out in public and out with our friends, our family, our society, our community, when people know we are Christian, we do literally represent Jesus into the situation, and therefore we come with a certain expectation about how we are going to behave. And I think the sad thing is that people don't realize we're as human as the next person, and we're broken, and we need healing and forgiveness as much as anyone else, and sometimes we get it wrong. Frequently, in my case. So As we move into our new vision, as we start to explore the four pillars in of Emmanuel that we're going to be looking at, the attracting others, changing perspectives, growing individuals, and the sacrificially serving, I think this area helps us with a few of those areas today. This passage really helps us to understand a couple of those areas and to unpack them a little bit. So I'm wondering, when you hear that passage, what is it that you first gravitate? What is Jesus talking about? And I've heard talks on this before, and we're going to look a little bit about the difference between law and grace. And that's perhaps quite a common teaching out of this passage, the difference between law and grace. I think that's not the point of what Jesus is making. I think he's telling something else, and I shall tell you for why as we go through. So what is the perception of the church in our modern secular society? We live in a growing secular society. I would say that our society here in the UK is no longer Christian. It is very much a secular, liberal secular society that we live in. But what is the perception of the church? You know, how do people perceive us in here? Now, I know I've mentioned this in the past, that people have an expectation of what we do in here, and they have a perception. And I would suggest that on the whole, the church is very good at presenting itself as dull, rather rules-based. It's all about what you can and can't do. And most definitely, it's out of touch with the modern world. You know, we are not talking the same language that they're talking. We have different expectations. Some of that is very much something that we need to address within the church. Some of it, I think, is us saying, well, actually, we're called to be different. We are called to be set apart. It's one of the things we looked at yesterday. The Spirit empowers us to do is to be set apart. He literally sanctifies us, and therefore we are called to be different. And we're not called to blend in and just adapt to them. We're called to say, well, actually, there's a plumb line. And we're called to stand on this side of it and to be a prophetic voice to our nation. And say, look, you've wandered too far from this. And the prophets of old were doing that throughout the Old Testament, saying, you've wandered away from God and trying to call people back to him. Now, I'm fairly sure the rise in secularism comes from the rising tide of individualism, which exists very much in our society today. Everybody is right, and everyone has rights, except, of course, those who say otherwise, and it's usually the church, the Christian church in particular. So everyone has rights and has a voice, unless it's the Christian church, and then your voice doesn't count, because you often say that, actually, we don't respect that right, and we don't value that right in the same way we value other rights. And so it's such a rising case of individualism, and I would suggest that individualism is inherently flawed from the very basic assumption that we are not individuals, that we are not an island. No man is an island. We live in community, and therefore individualism can never work, because we are not called to be individuals. We're called to live in community. Right from the beginning, as we looked at yesterday, the whole assumption of creation was about relationship. You know, it stemmed from the relationship of the Trinity, and therefore individualism is flawed, because we're not called to be individuals. We're called to live in community, as a community of believers. And individualism is all about me. Community is about us. How do we work together? And we're going to look at that in a bit. So, in the time of Jesus, Jews were required to fast. It was a requirement around the time of the atonement. Once a year, they had to fast. But what had become custom, not law, was that they would fast a couple of days a week. This wasn't a requirement under the law of Moses. But it just was a tradition that had grown out. And, you know, we all have traditions. The church has got loads of traditions. Some of them we understand. Some of them are a complete mystery to most of us. And some of them are a complete mystery to those people that practice the traditions, if I'm entirely honest. You ask them, why do you do this? They go, we don't know. We always do. It sounds like, what's his name? From Fiddler on the Roof, isn't it? Why do I do this? I can tell you, tradition. But, you know, we're full of traditions, and this tradition of fasting had become sort of culturally appropriated. So people fasted a couple of times a week. John's disciples were fasting. So it was very well accepted. Jesus, however, and his disciples had a different way of doing things. They didn't fast. And of course, this then comes to the attention of not just John's disciples, but the Pharisees start to see, because the Pharisees are always looking for lawbreakers and rule breakers, because that's the heart of a Pharisee. The Bible portrays the Pharisees as someone who's looking for people who do things wrong all the time. That's why we get the expression, oh, you're just being a Pharisee. You know, you're just looking to, you're all about law and rules and regulations. And so the people, it says, it doesn't say the Pharisees, it says people come and ask Jesus, why? Why are your disciples not fasting, but everyone else is fasting? Why are we all fasting, but yours aren't? And I think it's a justifiable question, because on the whole, not many people like fasting. It's designed to be uncomfortable. That's the point of it, really, isn't it? You know, if everyone enjoyed fasting, Jesus would have, you know, they would have come up with another way to concentrate your mind on God, wouldn't they? If fasting was a natural habit, they would have found some other way to try and focus and discipline your body. But they come to Jesus and say, why are your disciples not, but everyone else? And then Jesus tells them this little sort of story, and he used his references that the Bible uses it, and in particular book of Revelation, in the John's revelation, this image of the bride and the bridegroom, the church and Jesus coming together at the big wedding feast in the end times. And Jesus says, well, when the bridegroom's around, the people invited to the wedding, they don't fast, because that's a rubbish wedding. It's effectively what. Can you imagine getting invited to a wedding and you go to the wedding breakfast and there in front of you is just nothing? You go, well, we thought it would be really good if today's wedding you could fast with us. I mean, it would be cheap, wouldn't it? So all dads out there with daughters, you might want to consider that as an option. You know, a wedding breakfast of fasting. And of course, he's making a valid point. When you go to weddings, it's a time of celebration and joy. But these people were used to the practice of fasting. But in the Old Testament, fasting comes with this concept of sorrow and grief. So other than the legal requirement to fast around this one season of the Jewish year, you would fast otherwise in the Old Testament, where at times of sorrow and grief, when the nation had when the nation was falling away from God, and you'd get perhaps prophets or kings literally sackcloth ashes, fasting the whole works, you know, going full out on fasting. But it was very much driven around an event and associated with sorrow and grief. But Jesus was saying, well, this is a different season, because the Messiah is here. This is not a season of sorrow and grief. This is a season of celebration and joy. And it's a season of partying. And he says one day a time will come when they will fast again, because it will be a time of sorrow and grief. A time when the Messiah will be crucified and sorrow and grief will come back. And yes, fasting will come back. So how is this good news? One of the questions we're asking about as we journey through Mark and is this concept of how is this good news? The whole point of the gospel is that it is good news. So where is the good news in this? It can be found, I think, in two areas. So I want to have a quick look at it. One of these is the usual difference between law and grace. And this custom had become tradition. It was not a legal requirement, but people were being held to account by these rules as though they were actually the law of God. And what we have to understand as we look at the Old Testament, we have to understand that the Old Testament does have some laws in it. And they're laws that God commits to his people and says, these are the rules by which you should live. Okay? These are the rules that I think are a good way to live. And if you unpack the rules and the laws of the Old Testament, they come in sort of different categories. laws of worship, of sort of culture and community, and of purity. But the heart behind them is a God who says, if you want to live in community with me, with each other, and with yourself, these are the best ways I've got of doing that. So actually, the laws of the Old Testament are very much a love language of God towards his people. They're saying, these are not just rules because I think you need rules in your life. These are rules because this is just going to be a blessing to you. These commandments that I give you are a gift, a blessing. They're not a God who just likes to give rules because he's a mean, angry father. These are rules because there will be a blessing to your community, there will be a blessing to you, and there will be a blessing to us in our relationship. But what the community had done was taken those laws and then slowly built more and more and more rules, because what they wanted to do was to protect those laws so much. And they were so scared that they were going to break one of the rules of the Old Testament that actually they started to put the boundary a little bit further away from actually what the Lord had said. So if the Lord had said, you know, there's the line, don't cross it, they'd actually moved the line to there and said, well, we won't go any further than that. And then, of course, over time, that line gets further and further away from what the original heart of God was, till eventually they're bound in a legalism that has nothing to do with actually the commandment that God originally gave them. And so this concept of you must fast all the time, there's nothing wrong with fasting. There is nothing wrong with fasting. You find it through the Bible. You find it as a commandment. But what you don't want is to have the rules of you must fast twice a week. The command, the heart of God was, I'd love it if you were able to commit some time to me. I'd love it if you could be able to discipline your body so that we can really get in tune with each other. That's the heart of God. The heart of the law is you must fast twice a week or you are going to be in trouble. The heartbeat of God is, I want to know you. I want to get to know you better. I want you to know me better. And that's going to come by you spending time in my presence. And so there's this difference between the law and grace. And we looked at that a little bit yesterday. So the law says you must, and grace says you don't have to, but I'd like it if you do. It will be beneficial for you if you do. And Jesus, we know, he had big arguments with the Pharisees because the Pharisees were all about you must, you must, you must. And Jesus says, no, it's not you must. It's I want to. I want to because I want to be in relationship with the Father. I want to be in relationship with each other. I choose this path because it's going to be beneficial. Not you must, because the Lord tells me I must. Because actually the law had so many rules and regulations that bound people in captivity. And Jesus, I've come to set you free from that so you can just delight to be in the Father's presence. And so Jesus says, no. This is a season of grace for them at the moment. They're in the presence. They don't realize this really fully at this stage. It's really early on, bear in mind, in the story of Jesus in the account of Mark. But they're in the presence of the Messiah, the bridegroom. God incarnate has come to be with them. This is not a season of fasting. This is a season of joy, of banqueting, of feasting, of delighting, of presence. It's a season of grace, and it's a season of abundance. So there's a difference, and Jesus wants to set people free from this concept of law to live in grace. The problem is with humanity is we want to have a foot in both camps. You see, when we're aggrieved, we want a foot in the camp of law. We want justice. But when it comes to us, we want grace. And Jesus is really clear on this. His teaching is simple. You live in one or the other. You choose. You can live in law if you want. And you can demand your rights. You can demand retribution when you're punished. You can demand for justice to be served. But if you live and demand that for others, Jesus says, you too will be judged by the same. So you too will be judged by justice. And the problem is we don't want that. We want to be judged by grace. And grace is all about getting stuff that you don't deserve. And Jesus said, if you want to get the stuff that you don't deserve, that's grace and mercy, then start to live with a heart of grace and mercy. If you live like that, you will get that. If you want justice, that's fine, but you'll get justice as well. If you want justice for others, you'll get justice. So he says, choose. And Jesus is saying, I'm bringing in a season of grace. I'm trying to introduce this concept of grace into our community. It's not about rules. It's about delighting in the Father's presence. It's not about you must. It's about I'd love to. And so that concept of law and grace is quite a sort of some common teaching about this passage. But I don't think it's entirely the point Jesus is making. And the reason is this, because the story doesn't end with the bride, the banquet. Jesus says, but one day this season's going to come to an end and they're going to go back to fasting again. And we know that the season of grace doesn't end, that Jesus' grace is continual. It's abundant and it's moving forward. The kingdom of God has been established and it's going to continue to push through until eventually it's completely established when Jesus comes back and it's fully present and we're living in that new kingdom. So it's not just about this concept of law and grace. Jesus is teaching something else here as well, I think. And I think he's teaching this, it's about seasons. Because he says, look, we're in a different season now. So start judging us on what has happened in the past. What's gone on in the past. And actually, church, this is really important because I think we do this quite a lot. I think the church is very good at looking at other churches and saying, you're not doing it right. You're not doing it how we think you should be doing it. But the reality is, the disciples of Jesus are living in a different season. Jesus doesn't criticize John's disciples. At no stage does he criticize the disciples for not fasting, for fasting with John's disciples. He doesn't criticize them at all. He says that it's just my disciples are living in a different experience at the moment. My disciples are living in a different season. And this season has got a limited time and it will change. They will go back. And he uses this example about cloths and patches and wine and wineskins. And if you know anything about fabric, when it is washed, it shrinks. So if you've got an old piece of, in the old days, if you had this old tunic that you'd washed numerous times, it had shrunk to, and it was lovely. It's really cozy. It was your favorite thing to kick around in the evenings in first century Israel, watching the sun go down. But it got a little bit of a tear in it, and so you got a new piece of fabric and sewed it on. The new piece of fabric, as that garment was washed over a period of time, would start to shrink. But the problem is the original tunic that you had already shrunk, so there was no more shrinkage to happen. And so the patch would shrink and effectively tear the old garment. It would create another tear because the patch would shrink. And then Jesus says, the same happens with wineskins. You have a wineskin, it was an old stomach of a sheep or a goat usually, and that would be used to store wine in. And when they were fresh, they had an elasticity about them. And so you would put new wine into a new wineskin because wine over a period of time, as it fermented, gave off gases, and so it would expand, but so would the elasticity of a new wineskin. The sheep's stomach would expand. It was brought out of the sheep by then, but it would expand, and everything would be great. But if you used an old wineskin, put new wine into it, the old wineskin had already had its elasticity stretched to its limit. You'd put new wine in it, filled it to the top, and then over time, the gases would build up, and it would go pop. You'd lose all your wine, and that would be a very sad day. So Jesus said, you don't do that. If you've got something new, you don't try to squeeze it into the old. That makes no sense, Jesus is saying. So if something new is happening, don't try to judge it by the standards of the old. Accept that there are seasons. And one of the most, a common passage that's read out in funerals, I think, sums this up. It's from Ecclesiastes. Now, you may remember it from the book of Ecclesiastes. If you're people of a certain generation, you may remember it because it was a song by the Birds. There is a season, turn. That was added by the Birds. But it talks about the fact there's a season for everything under the sun. And that actually we go through seasons, and seasons are okay. There is a season for this, a season for that, a season for that. And we have to understand. And the kingdom of God is constantly changing. It's constantly adapting. So stop trying to judge other people by your expectations and accept that maybe God's doing something different here. And that's okay. It doesn't mean that what you're doing is wrong. It just means that they're doing something different and God's heart is for something different there. And I think that is more accurate to what Jesus is actually teaching here. It's not, and there is something about law and grace and for the church to stop being so judgmental against each other, about itself and about others, and saying, well, you need to be doing this. And Jesus is saying, there's seasons. There is a season for different churches, different groups of people go through different seasons and different expectations and different realities, because each church is a community and each community is a family, and every family is different and has its own unique problems, its own unique challenges, and they adapt to overcome those challenges as God moves with them and God's Spirit moves in them. If the church was just the same throughout the whole world, do you know what? Then the comments about our secular society would be well-founded. We probably would be really dull and out of touch with the modern world. But Jesus calls each church to be unique, a unique expression of him, wherever they are and whatever they're doing. And that means we cannot judge each other by the same standards. We have to say, well, they're doing something different. And maybe that's what God's asked them to do at this season. And maybe that's okay. One of the big challenges that our church and the Church of England are facing at the moment, if you keep up to date with the Church of England press, I shan't say what I was about to say. Now, if you keep up to date, you'll realise that there's quite a lot of tension going on because the church is looking exactly at this. There's a really interesting report, which I've circulated to the leaders, General Synod Report 2223, which is all about the church's new ideas, new vision of new communities, lay-led leadership, lay churches. Here there are communities of faith in different places doing different things. It's come under quite a lot of criticism from the established churches and saying, this isn't how we do things. This isn't Anglican. The Anglican church is not lay-led. The Anglican church is always... You're thinking, well, yes, but do they not understand anything how the Anglican church is set up? The Anglican church always sits under a bishop. However, community always sits under the authority of a bishop. It has to. And so it's never entirely lay-led. It's always got a bishop sitting over them. But I think this is what Jesus is talking about here. We're sitting back and going, you can't do that. We've never done it like that before. That's not how we are in the Anglican church. And Jesus is saying, well, maybe I'm calling them to do something different. Stop living in law. Start living in grace. You know? Start living in grace a little bit. Hopefully, as we've sort of talked through that, it challenges me, because I am one of the people that look up some of my colleagues in the deanery and think, I wouldn't do it like that. You know, and perhaps there's a process of repentance that I need to go through and say, well, actually, that's all right, because I'm really fortunate God's not called me to lead that church. He's called me to lead this church. And I'm fairly sure, in fact, I know there's a lot of people in the deanery that look at Emmanuel and go, I wouldn't do it like that. And that's okay, because they're called to lead their church and not this one. So we need to stop being judgmental about our brothers and sisters, because ultimately we are all pulling in the same direction. Sometimes it's hard to believe that, but we are all pulling in the same direction. We're all pulling and working for the kingdom of God. It looks different, and that's okay. And also, I think there is something about God will continually remind us. And I think we see that as the stories play out in Mark's gospel. If you want grace, start living in grace. If you want justice, that's what you're going to get, because that's where you live. So, you know, there is a season, I think, where the Lord is asking us to soften our hearts towards other people, to stop being quite so judgmental, and to say, you know, Lord, there is only one person that's really able to judge, and that's you. I'll leave it to you. Give me a heart of grace in this season. And with a sense of excitement, look forward. Look forward, because I think, yeah, this is right at the beginning of Mark's gospel. Look forward. This is a new season. And Jesus is saying, new wine is coming into new wineskins. And so is your heart like that new wineskin, or is it like an old wineskin? Has it already been stretched to its capacity? So when you put the new wine in it, it's just going to pop. Or are you prepared to let your heart be stretched for the excitement and the adventure of the new season, of the new wine that's coming?